Jimmy's, today we're doing something we've never done before. Over the last two incredible seasons of Access Genie, we've really explored the journeys of entrepreneurs as well as leaders, but there's been one big recurring theme. It is the brutal toll that entrepreneurship can take on mental health. So this week, we've compiled powerful clips from our guests in the hopes to help you navigate those challenges. Whether you're in a dark phase right now, maybe you're working through trauma, or you're just managing the grind, this episode is here to remind you, you're not alone and you can overcome. Let's dive in.
And then 2022, I was super overwhelmed because the business was bigger than it had ever been. I had more employees than I had ever had, and I actually lost my mind. I ended up in Akesu, which is a mental health hospital. And when I came back, I said, I'm going to go to Bali for 2 months. That was my plan. But when I got out, because I am such a high achiever, and what I actually did is I got a factory space, and a very big factory space, and I got a studio space for my second business, and so that we could always have a space to shoot our new catalog, and it could always be uniformed. And then we had the store, and as the year went on, the depression just hit because I was so unhappy with running business at that capacity level. And I was pulled in so many different directions. So yeah, I went into a deep depression, and then my autoimmune condition was also triggered. So essentially last year, I spent 4 to 6 months just sort of in bed. And then this year, I decided to close down the store and take an official sabbatical, which I did, and only now recently getting back into business.
Mm. Yeah, you know, I think a lot of entrepreneurs do suffer from depression. And sometimes at the moment you crash, it would have been building up for way longer because signs are there, but you keep on ignoring it time and time again. Because, like, I'm this high achiever, I'm going to be okay, I'm okay, and ignoring it until you can't get out of bed anymore. I also got depressed. I think we were suffering from depression at almost the same time. It was also for me in 2021 where I had massive depression. 2021 and a bit of 2022. I remember not being able to get out of bed. I was not motivated. My client work suffered. I was no longer creative or innovative. You know, I would fight with Mongezi each time he wanted to open the curtains. I remember spending weeks without even being onto the porch outside of my house. Yeah. Weeks on weeks on end. I had thousands of unread WhatsApp messages. You'd call me, you'd not find me. I remember one day I just woke up and I found my mom sitting outside. Like, what's going on? It's like, I've been so worried, and you don't answer phones. I don't know what's wrong. So I just decided to just come. I didn't know if you're home or not. Everything is locked. So I was just going to sit here until dark. And depression gets so tough that if you don't have the fight in you to, number one, realize that something is wrong and I need to do something about it, and number two, let me fight for myself and my life and get out of it. You can be stuck there forever and you won't be able to come out and be yourself again. So that decision that you took to say, let me seek help, what drove you to that? How long did it take until you realized that, let me seek help?
So when I look back on my depression journey, I would say that it probably started in 2019. So this was a personal triggered thing. At the time, my father had had two strokes. So watching somebody who was so strong, you know, deteriorate and essentially grieving them while they were still alive was very emotionally hard on me. And also I put this pressure on myself that I wanted to achieve these certain things in my parents' lifetime. I wanted to be able to give them certain luxuries and give them a certain lifestyle, and I put, and also to see, for them to both see me achieve to a certain level. So that's why up until that time I was extremely driven. And then another thing that added to that was I was struggling with infertility because of the autoimmune condition. So I really, really wanted a child, but I worked. So what I did to fill my time was that I worked. And I worked so hard until I got to the point where I had no friends, I had no social life, and I never used to have fun. So all for fun, I would work. I actually really enjoyed working, but I needed to have time when my mind switched off. So the first time that I had a psychotic episode, it actually just happened. I was really, really stressed out at work. And I mean, when you've reached that level, there's nothing to do but admit you. So I didn't have that awareness that I was depressed because I never stopped to really think or look up, even though I was somebody who used to meditate and do yoga and go walking, and I was a very peaceful person, but I didn't have that awareness that I was depressed.
To a person who does not have. I'm very empathetic to a person who knows what poverty feels like. I'm very empathetic to a woman who knows what it's like, and even a man, even boys, who know what it's like to be violated. Because I often say that, especially for boys, oh, that's a conversation for another day. When a young boy is violated, even sexually, they become very angry, traumatized beings who are not able to have the language to articulate what has happened to them. And then they surround themselves with a community of boys that tell them, actually, it's a good thing that it happened to you. They were just, you should thank your lucky stars because she was older. So she technically took you through school. That's not school. It's called rape. Right. And then we get surprised why these little boys turn into angry, abusive men that we marry. Right. So there's a lot of things that need to be dug up. And that's why, as I said, trauma can either define you or trauma can actually catapult you into finding what your purpose is. And trauma has catapulted me to finding my purpose.
How has the upbringing that you have, especially those tough times of your childhood, impacted your relationships with your parents, relationships with your teams and employees at work, and how does it show up even in your career?
Sure. I think with my parents, we had to have the talk. And this is how my talk went. My talk was, so this is what happened to me. Okay, guys. This is what you, and you have to own it, right? I remember having conversations thoroughly with them to say I was sexually molested, you know, and thank God, I do thank God that I was never raped. I was not raped. But whatever it is those people did to me, those kids or those teenagers did to me, it shaped me, right? And I had to have the talk and say, guys, this is what happened, and it happened under your roof while you were there. Not in the room, but you were there. And it was a hard conversation to have because I had to forgive my parents. Then I had to have the talk of, you cannot as a child make me an adult and make me a mediator between two warring parents. Because a lot of times I had to play the mediator. I had to literally sit in between my parents and mediate them because one was going to throw a slap across the room and across the table. Very easy. It was something that was very normal, actually. There would be times where I, till to this day, trauma. So I'm able to gauge voices because the voice at home between my parents would rise to a certain level. And I used to know that at a specific level, there will be silence. And the silence does not mean that it's ended. The silence means that my father's now hitting my mother. That's how deep the trauma goes, right? So I have an attuned to voices. I have an attuned to understanding when inflections rise and how does it rise because of trauma. But I think, and I thank God for therapy, that when you go to therapy, when you also acknowledge your weaknesses and you acknowledge your past, you don't let your past define you. So you say, look, because of so much trauma, I have got the capacity to be a very angry, bitter, oh, don't touch me kind of woman. Or I can be a woman who says, I've acknowledged my past. I don't take away from my past. My past actually helped me to become who I am in this own way. But I can be different to my past and I don't have to repeat the mistakes of my parents. I don't have to be an angry black woman. I don't have to be a woman that hates men. I love men. I'm the softest, right? But I am also assertive, right? Because I know that when something is nonsense, and I call it out. I say, this is nonsense. Mm-hmm. If something is right, I'm the first person to embrace it and say it's right. So what you do is, first of all, you understand that there's brokenness. And I think a lot of us struggle with understanding that we are broken. Even entrepreneurs, we're broken people. People are entrepreneurs. Secondly, in our brokenness, we almost are scared to get help. Get help. Mm-hmm. You know, get a therapist, get somebody to talk to about the traumas that you've experienced. Because trust you me, entrepreneurship is trauma alone. Mm-hmm. Not being able to pay the bills and the stuff is trauma. But also, I think, get to a point where you forgive yourself and forgive others for what happened to you. I forgave myself. Even as a child, I mean, I've had to forgive myself for not fighting back. I know it sounds very dumb, but I used to actually hate myself that as a 12-year-old girl, I did not fight those two boys. How was I going to fight them? But I had to forgive myself. And I had to forgive my parents. And I've had to forgive anybody else that's hurt me along the way. That's the only way you heal is through...
Actually, it was one of the elections. And obviously, I had to get a day pass. And I'd gone back home for that Saturday. And I didn't take off my hospital band. So I go to the voting station. So this lady asks me, then Najee, yini. I'm like, no, I'm in hospital. I just got a day pass just so I can come and do this. It's like, why in hospital? And for me, it's never been something that's like been a secret. Like I didn't feel like I needed to hide why I was in hospital. It's like, oh no, I got diagnosed with depression, bipolar and anxiety. So, you know, it's like, hey, you're depressed why yini? Like, you've got like, and for me, that changed my life forever. You know, I could have taken that very negatively and, you know, something could have happened. But I was like, okay, I think God is trying to say something. We need to start teaching our Black communities about mental health because it's so taboo. Like, we feel like it is a white man's disease, this thing, but it's not. We all go through whatever emotions and our emotions are valid. Like, we just need to understand them better so that we can live kahle in harmony, kube kuhle, you know. So, yeah, that journey, honestly, it changed my life forever. I don't want to lie. Because even Mang Puma, I was like, yeah, no, we have to work now. I then started my baby called Silent Crisis, which aims to teach people about mental health. And this year, we're back with the banger, so stay tuned to my social media pages, you know. But it's just that where I just want to teach people. It's okay to be depressed. It's okay to be anxious. It's okay to have all these illnesses, but you just need to learn how to manage it. It's our superpower. Kanye once said this, like, your bipolar is your superpower. Your depression is your superpower. So for me, my mental illnesses are literally just that. It's my superpower, and I use that to heal people and to live out my full potential and my full purpose.
Yeah. Tell me, take me back to that day where the pin drops, like, shoo, and they're going to come and repossess and take stuff and... What was going through your mind in that moment?
Now with the, again, you know, I will say, I don't know really. There is literally a God out there and he looks out for some people. Because, yeah. I mean, I was probably not somebody that, you know, I should get that kind of an advantage. But when that happened, And of course, like I said, in my family, there's a whole track of mental health. Like, you know, people with mental health, they get triggered quite easily. Mm-hmm. So there I was, just found out that I'm going to lose. I was so excited. I was relieved. Actually, that's the word. You know why? Because going through this process, remember, it's not just like one day you're losing stuff. So you've been losing things. And now I've been trying to act as if things are going right. I've been faking it. And it's the faking it until you make it wasn't working.
So remember when I finished school, I went and got a job. I worked only for 3 years in three different companies, and I found out that this was a toxic environment that is not for me. Well, it wasn't, let's say it wasn't toxic. It was me who wasn't supposed to be there. Mm-hmm. So I had gone and found an IT job 3 times, and I thought something was wrong first with them. Then I went and saw that it was me definitely who's got something wrong. And then, of course, then I had to quit and then went into business, which was, in my family, nobody has ever done this. So it wasn't something that my family members knew how to support me through it. They were just like, no, just keep the job. And then my friends and whoever, the social community that I had, they were like, oh, we give you 3 months and we shall see. When you think you are special, you're going to leave a job because you are what? You are stressing. You don't like, oh, no, the next thing was, I don't like the job. Why are you leaving a job, boss? Because I don't like it. Wow. You're going to leave a job because you don't like it? What do you think you are? So from that day on, I had this whole thing on my shoulders that I need to prove that I'm making it. So as things go by, I lose one business, I start another one. I lose this one, I start another one. But these were not my callings. I lose another one, I start another one, I lose another one. And I'm trying to keep up with the, I am actually a businesswoman and it's working. Oh, no, it's not working. No, I'm not in my calling. No, I can make money, but no, this is not me. And I just think God was just trying to show me that, no, you're clever, but not that bad. So the day that happened, I slept throughout the night. And I was like, oh, finally, I don't have to go out there, act like things are fine. If I'm going to lose everything, now everybody's going to know. But then the weirdest thing, I thought that the people close to me would sort of understand. No, they didn't. So one, that really was painful. So of course, my closest family member, they don't have a choice. They just have to deal with my craziness. It is what it is. Of course, I married my husband, had to deal with it. Mtanabantu, be careful who you marry, because damn, be careful who you marry. Other people like me,
yourself in 40 million
people like debt. Me are not safe. Don't marry them. So now, those were, they had to deal with me. I am Mbabo, there's nothing they can do about that. But people that are in the social system, that's when I found out that people actually were looking, the older people were actually like, damn. So at church, my pastor said, oh my goodness, the mighty has fallen. He literally had a whole entire, like, the mighty has fallen. So I bought this old Mercedes-Benz. You see these old, old ones. Apparently they have a name. They call them, my father was once rich. So all my cars were taken away. Then I just like to buy something to walk, you know, drive around with. The pastor was making a joke about the fact that I bought that car when he was the one who was enjoying my other cars. Now that so I was shocked how people actually like were waiting for this to sort of unfold. I mean, I'm not sure why, but again, when you are in it, people are not coming with you. You're gonna go by yourself. So, but I was relieved. And then, of course, then I saw the drama that unfolded, like the whole church thing and all of that. But again, I'm glad that happened because it opened my eyes, because I thought church was like your home and everybody loved you. And, you know, I mean, I was doing so much work at church. I was the one who was collecting the offerings. I will make sure everybody gives. Those things don't work when you are in trouble. They tell you that we will pray for you, bye bye. So I found out that not everything that I thought was, it was like that. So again, I learned how to trust me, to believe in me, and not put anybody in that space.
I remember the one day I woke up, because I had resigned at MTV, and then I was going to start my first day at DNA Brand Architects, my first day. I woke up in the morning and I was depressed. Why was I depressed? Because I'm waking up this morning. Yesterday I was the director of marketing and communications at MTV Network. So I'm able to pick up a phone and call someone in the role. But today I'm actually like, I run an agency that no one knows, that's done no work for anybody. And so I struggled. I felt I needed to reintroduce myself to myself again, because I had known myself based on the titles or the job that I was doing, and that was not who I was. So I struggled. I had to work hard in, you're not MTV. You are Sylvester Chowken. So introduce yourself to a meeting. So we go to a meeting, and then my first day of work, I go to a meeting, and everybody is in the room, and they say, we must all introduce ourselves. So I say, my name is Sylvester. I'm from DNA Brand Architect. They're like, who's DNA Brand Architect? I was like, oh, it's an agency. How old have you been? Literally, it's been like a day. Just started. So already, as you can see, this repositioning that requires you to have not only a belief in your business, but you got to believe in yourself, because you are walking into a space that you haven't walked before, and you don't have the credentials, the credibility. As a business person, you have the credential as a marketing person and in companies, you know, from where I came from. But I had to really start believing in Sly again, and reintroduce myself to myself as, yes, now you are a nobody, so to speak, but you are going to build something that will then gain you credibility into the future. So
to hear, see, imagine, like, something that catastrophic happens to you and everybody wants to know. And I mean, with good reason, some maybe not so much, because I guess, you know, we need to know when something bad happens to the next person. But some were genuinely, and I think most actually, genuinely concerned. But I didn't know how to face that. Even the ones that were caring, I still felt extremely, you know, scared and terrified and unsafe. And so I just threw myself into your world.
And I thank God for that. And I think that's like such a big lesson for all of us to just ask for help. Even if you don't know if the person is capable of helping you. I didn't even know I was capable of helping you. Neither did I know how I'll do it. Even now, I don't know how we did it. It can only be God.
Absolutely.
And the strength that you have. I remember the first photo shoot that we did at Fairlawns. Shout out to Fairlawns, Shame. They supported us.
Thank you, Fairlawns. Thank you. We remember.
They were at a time where I was so aware that you were going through so much. Mm. I didn't have a lot to offer than to just go and fight for you.
Mm.
And I think what gave me the strength to do that was seeing the strength in you. Mm-hmm. You were fighting every day, guys. So even when you say, Ansel, I threw myself in your hands because I didn't know what to do. Listen, you were there. Maybe you might not remember because you were going through so much.
Mm-hmm.
We're at Fairlawns and I'm saying, guys, you need to go work because what is your son going to eat? Your rent is due. Need a manepi. You carry your whole family, not just you and your son.
Mm.
You have an entire family of people that rely on you.
Absolutely.
And I know you're grieving, but girl.
You remember I said to you, hey, Ansela, hey, Nkalile. Yes, Nkalile, ngaza ngabona ukuthi actually maybe sekuzophuma igazi manje, you know. And then I said, but ngizokhala kuze kube nini, because a lot more is going to go bad. A lot more is going to go wrong if I continue to wallow in this grief. But even with saying that, I think it was also coming from understanding that I did allow myself to grieve, and which is an important part of the process. Because if you don't allow yourself to sit in that pain and to face it and to really, really allow it to make you sick to the pit of your stomach, if it has to, there's no way out of it. You know, sometimes you have to go and dig out the dirt and squeeze it out until it is clear, and then only healing can take place. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did. You know, that shoot at Fairlawns, I remember how I couldn't even stand. I mean, I had not worn a heel in over a year, and I still had to try and walk or stand or pose. My hand was still like wobbling down. You know, I couldn't even pose. We had to position it, and then we'd look, run to the camera. Did we get that shot? And I laugh now. I look at God and I'm like, wow.
Yeah. And I think it's so testament of what we always said. We'll be like, Sissy, it's hard right now. One day we're going to sit and cry tears of joy. And I feel like we're sitting on that one day right now, because I'm like, I haven't thought about those periods in such a long time that now I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
You know, we... this has been able to manifest itself.
Absolutely.
Can you take me back to your earliest moment of experiencing trauma?
My earliest trauma memory is ironically in Sekresh. My abuser, I don't want to claim him, the predator who was in my life at that time, used to take me to a creche, you know, and I'm obviously under the age of 4, right? And so I've never known a life without trauma. I've never had an experience where things are okay, things are smooth. It's just always been something is about to go down, right? So yeah, just to answer that question quickly, I think I was about 3 years old, like my earliest memory. And with the research that I've done, things actually happened at a much younger age to me, but I can only remember from, you know, sangene
crash. Yeah. What are those things that were happening to you from even that young age?
So, unfortunately for me, and like most of us, teenage mom, you know, and she was 16 when she had my brother and 19 when she had me. And, you know, by the time you're 20, only now you want to live your life and. So she'd leave us with our dad. I don't know if it was out of spite, you know, if you're an irresponsible father, you know. So my mom would leave for whatever reason. Maybe she went hustling, maybe she went grooving, whatever. And then my dad would leave, right? And unfortunately, yet again, for me, I had this predator in the family who was aware of our family dynamics, that my parents are, you know, quite volatile in their relationship. And I think now that I know that predators always want a victimized child. You know what I mean? If you're already in an unhealthy family. So I became prey to this guy because he was part of the family. And I mean, he would finger me at a young age. He would make me, you know, suck, you know. I mean, it was so bad that my bladder actually collapsed. And I was bedwetting until I was like 16. And that was something I had to just carry with me. And I think that's where my confidence came. Because, you know, you know that thing, was cool. We'd always used to tease each other. And I was that girl who was always teasing, you know? And I was okay with it because I knew, Uguti, it's not my fault. Something is wrong. And yeah, essentially, you know, from way before I could even remember, already things were not okay. You know, so it got so bad that one day I was watching, there's an old series, now I'm going to expose my age, called Vicious Cycle. That was the theme song. And one of the kids in that home, it was a story about a, you know, children's home, was sexually abused and she had to speak. So that's when I broke down. I was like, oh, okay, so this is wrong. This is not supposed to be happening. But now this is Matabo, the 9-year-old. So from the ages of maybe, let's say, 6, 9 months, who knows, all the way until 9, I was in this guy's space. He would buy me clothes. And I didn't know then, but he was conditioning me to see him as a hero, because most of my parents are out there doing their things. So if he comes with a t-shirt, then it's like uyangithenga, or almost silencing me, right? So yeah, that's the rocky start I started from. And it didn't help that my parents were quite physical also. My dad was a karate sensei and my mom was an angry black woman. So those two was just like big, like combustion, you know, when they're together. I mean, the most traumatic story or memory that I have that does not necessarily include my body being violated is the day my mom was axed on her head by my father. And I mean, I've always been a big baby, you know? And my mom had to carry me for a good 6-7 kilometers to the nearest police station. She was smart enough not to pull out the axe.
That whole video. And for the first time, I was able to stand up for myself and say, I know it came off very emotional. I know that you probably wouldn't have done it yourself, but that is my brand. If there's one video that I'm going to keep up of me crying on the internet, it's that one. Because so many people came forward and said, you know what, actually, I went through that as well. I lost millions. I am sitting on a negative 2 million right now, and I didn't have the strength to even admit it to my own family. So the fact that you were able to admit it to the world, that you didn't even have to, you didn't owe them that explanation at all. You could have bounced back and no one would have been none the wiser. But you chose to be as authentic and as honest about what it takes to be a business person. That to me made me feel really proud. And even though right now I'm not where I was, not even close, but I'm getting there. But I've never felt so happy, Ansa.
Yeah, and I appreciated that video. It's actually not that video. That video I approved of. It's,
oh, okay.
It's other things where I'd be like, no. So like for me, it was one where you're talking about kicking people out of your Airbnb.
Okay, but no, that got me pissed.
I was like,
I'm not even proud of that one.
Oh my goodness.
Scrub from the internet. No, that one, I think, when I say that every single person makes mistakes, I mean, you're going to get ahead of yourself sometimes, right? And you're going to get very comfortable with who you are and who you think people think you are. And I was very comfortable at that time. And I said things that I should not have said, and in a way that I should not have said it. So that I'm not proud of at all. That is not my brand. And I hate that I've since then been perceived by a lot of people as being that cue.
Yeah.
And I understand that it was my mistake. I did do it. And I do apologize and take a lot of responsibility for that. But I've also grown from that a lot. And I appreciate every single person who came forward and gave their advice, you being one of them. And also I appreciate everyone who forgave me for that as well.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have to. My investors didn't have to stick around. Let me just call them fans for the sake of it. They didn't have to stick around, but they did.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes one thing that I have learned about success, back to that moment, what did that do to your mental health? Because I imagine that you were on your all-time high. You just gotten married. It's supposed to be living in your best life in that moment. And you come home to such devastation.
It really affected me. I mean, it was one of those moments where you're like, I think that's it. You understand? I think I'm just going to leave Barberin right there and then. I think I'm just going to just cut my losses and just take it from there. And kudos to my wife as well, because she has helped me through the whole process. She's been my person that I can talk to in times of need. And I think that is really important, to have somebody by your side that will just say, you know what, everything is going to be okay. Don't stress about it. We'll work things out together. And that's exactly the type of circles that you want to be around. People that's encouraging you, people that's talking positivity in you. And I mean, like, it's one of those lessons, but I thank God for that particular lesson. I thank God that how it played out the way it did. Because if it wasn't for that, there would be no Legends with 70-odd stores today. Yeah. There would be no success story. I think each and every person has to go through a journey of a downside and an upside.
Yeah, for sure. But you did sort of feel like giving up, right? Because you went and looked for a job and you were in the job market like everybody else.
Yeah, no, I continued working in a bank. Back then I was working at a bank. My job title, I was working at Standard Bank, and my job title was an account management consultant. Sounds very fancy, but I was just a debt collector. Yeah. So I used to call you when your account is overdrawn or in excess. And it was a job that never gave me any fulfillment. It was a job that I just, use as a stepping stone towards what I'm preparing myself for. And that was exactly what it was. Just looking back at everything that happened during that space, it was a preparation for a comeback.
Yeah. What kind of shift, especially mindset shift, did you have to have at that moment to say, listen, I have endured this horrible setback. I'm working in a job that doesn't fulfill me, that I don't enjoy. And this vision of cutting hair that I like, of which I've not seen many people who are cutting hair and like successful, but I still want to do it. What kind of shift did you need to have in your mind to be able to
be able to do
that?
I think there is a mental shift as well, but obviously something that also gains, that gives you confidence is when people start believing in you. And I've had a lot of people that would still call me and still say, when are you coming back? When are you getting back into the barbering game? I still need a haircut, you understand? And that call-in was a consistent call-in up until 2013. When I decided to get myself a scooter, and the scooter was my vehicle of servicing these people, and eventually I just grew confidence.
Proud to actually having the mind to write the book. I did not see how I was going to survive immediately when the retrenchment happened or the layoff happened, right? Because I was just in complete shock. How am I going to survive? And I remember I was driving at the time, and the first thing was sell the car, which I did, and tried to put money in some scheme, which I was scammed. There was some sort of scheme. I don't even remember what it was in South Africa. It was everywhere. If you put money, you're going to make so much money. And so I sold the car and I put money in that whole thing. Okay, I think this is the first time I'm telling this story.
Yeah.
And it was gone.
Completely. How much did you put the money in? How did the scheme work?
I don't even remember the details, believe you me. I just know that whatever came from the car, I got all of it got lost in that scheme. So whatever money that I had, I could fall back on, it was gone, right? Okay, Nikki, what next? You have to pay rent, you have to feed the kid. I'm a single mom at the time. It was exactly 1 year after my divorce that the retrenchment happened. So I'm like, I'm out here with two kids on my own, no support whatsoever from whoever, and I'm facing this, right? So it was very difficult. So I thought to myself, what do I do? And I remember going to downtown Johannesburg, looking for a space where I could sell on the street. To this day, I take my kids where I used to sell on the street to show them. That's where mommy used to sit. So I went there and I got a small space. For those who are familiar with downtown Johannesburg, you know how people sell on the street. You just sit, your tiny spot that you have, that's where you have. You can put maybe your table there, whatever you're selling. So I had a small table there. I was selling things like perfume, little accessories for ladies. And then at some point, I started selling food. But it just did not work in long term. While I was there on the streets of Johannesburg, I was listening to stories of other people selling on the street. And some people would tell me, I have been here for 5 years. I've been here for 10 years. I remember there was a guy who told me that he's been there for 15 years. And it shocked me. I was like, oh my God, I don't see myself here that long. Even 5 years is scary. This for me is like a temporary thing while I figure out what to do. So many of the stories I heard scared me. Like, I was like, I cannot, this is not for me. But while I'm on the street, I'm doing the research that is making me discover about this new world of technology. So I'm learning about all of these things. But during the day, I will be on the street trying to hustle, trying to get what we put food on the table for the kids and all of that. And at some point, I was like, I think there's a better way I can still hustle and be able to focus more on the writing part and not have to come to town every day, because going to the street every day, it was like another job that was yielding almost zero returns. There are days you could be there and you don't sell anything. I was like, I need to find a better way. And I learned how to do beads, for those who know African beads, where you still do like fashion jewelries, but with beaded work. So I learned how to do that on YouTube. I saw a lady doing it in town, and she was selling them in town. So I learned from YouTube how to do that, and I used to do beads and sell them. So I would just design them for the neck. Most of them were like people doing traditional weddings. They would buy them. So I set up a Facebook page for that, and I set up an Instagram page for that. And then I was advertising. So someone would create, we see an order. I actually designed a few and I modeled them myself, you know. Some people have said I could be a model. So I went on a photo shoot and I did a few shoots myself, and then I posted the pictures online. And then some people were saying, like, hey, Nikki, I like this. Who did this? Or like me? Like, oh, how much? And it was really not much. At the time, I would sell like 500 per set, you know, 700 per set max. And I will have others for that. And I was like, okay, this is a better way of doing it. Instead of me going to the street every day, I can do this from home, right? So that was one way in which I survived, yeah, immediately when all of these happened, selling stuff online and putting food on the table while doing my research for the book.
Yeah, I can imagine being a mom and newly divorced, and then this happened. Oh, you'd feel like things are just piling up at the same time.
I was barely ready for another knock. You know, I tell people it's like when you hit rock bottom, and you feel like you cannot go any lower. And then, boom, you realize that you could go lower, because I hadn't even made sense of the divorce yet. I'm still lost. Like, how? Like, I didn't imagine my life would end here with two kids and on my own. So I'm still making sense of all of this. And, boom, it was like an anniversary. Exactly 1 year later, I'm laid off from work. So it was a very dark moment in my life.
And how do you explain this to your kids? I'm trying to wrap my head around it. Mommy had a good office job. We had a car and things were good. And all of a sudden, mommy is hustling in town and now we don't have a car. How do you explain that to the kids?
I think they were too young to understand at the time. Maybe now they would ask questions like that because they're older. But at the time, my daughter was like three and a half, I think. My son was somewhere around seven. So kids, I think at that time, they were not really asking too many questions of what's going on, as long as they still eat their food and have their lunchbox to take to school. So there wasn't really much explanation, or maybe it could be my own negligence as a parent to explain to them why things are happening the way they are. But it just seemed like the kids were fine and life just carry on in a way.
Yeah. And you talk about, you know, having this idea to say, now I'm going to write this book. And there were moments where you disqualified yourself. And I think it's because you don't have a degree. You don't even know stuff about AI.
The most important one.
Yeah.
I don't have a technology background.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yet you both. Journey had started way before where you know, experienced some struggles in your life. Yeah. And I think attempted suicide at 16, again at 18, and I think again in your early 20s. How has owning back your mind gone for you? What was that process to like own it and say, I won't let it control me. I'm the one who's going to control this life and not be in this depressive state. Mm.
I had reached rock bottom. Yeah, I was in Johannesburg in a foreign city, no family, broke, famous, in a very toxic, abusive relationship. The person I was dating was constantly throwing me out. I didn't have a place to stay of my own. And I had to wake up. And that journey has been a roller coaster. For me, the entry point to waking up was through God. I had to first go back to prayer, go back to how I was raised. And remember my grandmother and remember my guides. But through it all, I think, honestly, when it was time to wake up, my guides did show themselves to me, because I think they also have had enough of my sleeping, if I can call it that. But I had to go back to God. I had to go back to my spirituality.
And that opened up a long journey of self-healing. Yeah. And then I had to start investigating what really happened. How did I find myself here? And as a storyteller, I knew that I had to start from the beginning. And I was like, what happened? And I found that there was a lot of anger, a lot of hurt, a lot of fear, and a lot of self-hate at the bottom and at the base of who I was. Being raised by a single parent. My father neglected me before I was even born. But he would come there and there, but he was hardly a present father. My mother was a young mom. She was 17 when she had me. And that put a lot of strain between her and her mother. So emotionally, she was absent. So I grew up as that child who lacked a lot of love and care. Even though there were people making sure that I'm alive, I'm taken care of, but inside I was dead, and I had been dead for a long time. My heart had been broken for a long time. Hence, I was attracting all of this mess. And I constantly felt like taking my own life. So I had went through childhood, teenage life, and young adult life, feeling like I'm not worthy of love and I'm not enough. And I had to investigate all of that. And God supported me through it all until I got to a point where I was brave enough to make that decision that actually I deserve life. I deserve to be alive. And everything that has happened, it doesn't have to define me. Yeah. So that's the journey.